This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Henry Sokolsky, the executive director of the Nonproliferation Policy Education Center, one of the signatories of a letter to the president of the United States about Zaporizhia, the largest nuclear power plant in Europe, now in a conflict zone, we're told by Kyiv, occupied by Russian military, including weapons of war used as outgoing artillery or outgoing missiles. We're not sure. There are armored personnel carriers in the area of the sensitive part of the plant. The electricity generating strikes me as something I'm familiar with from Fukushima. You lose power, you've got X number of minutes or hours to restore it before the whole system becomes unstable. However, what is to be done? I'm not looking for more troubles. Henry, I come to the IAEA inspectors who are said to be given access through the Ukrainian side to the plant. What can they do at the time? What can they do going forward that will, in some fashion, build in a buffer?
Well, I don't think they can build any buffer because they're going to visit and go home. They're not going to be used as human hostages to prevent further attack. They are very clear about that. But what they can do is, you know, check to see how much diesel fuel's on store. Do they really have 7 days, or has the diesel fuel been pilfered by the Russian military to operate various vehicles? They can check, you know, gross phenomena and confirm, you know, what the status of the power lines are, of the transformer, the control room. However, we should also keep in mind that it's very unlikely that the IAEA knows much about these plants in any way much beyond what the Russians know. And we know that the Russians are desperately trying to extract information from the Ukrainians about the specifics of the operation and design of the plant. I suspect that's going to be the kind of operational detail that, you know, the IAEA will lack. On the other hand, for the first visit or for any visit, we can at least confirm that things may be as bad as reported or not, with regard to the morale of the staff, perhaps. I mean, I don't know how they're going to be able to talk to the staff in candor if the risks are that if the staff speaks candidly, they will be hauled off and, you know, interrogated, tortured, or God forbid, made to disappear. So it's not a solution. It's a way of touching the pulse of the patient. It isn't some way to make the patient's heart function better.
Henry, a common sense idea: shutdown. How long would it take? Is it credible?
I think if it's now desirable, you could do it in less than a day, for sure. And it's not, as they would say, rocket science. There will be a problem if you do it. I mean, you still need electricity coming in, but you'll reduce the risks of higher levels of radiation possibly being released if, God forbid, there was one of all of the things that I mentioned, there were some other incident that took out some key component. The problem, I think, will come in the winter. And the reason why is, unfortunately, the Ukrainians followed the French example. They overbuilt the nuclear capacity for what the country needed, and they exported it, and like the French. And they had so much, they encouraged the use of what's called baseboard electrical heating in homes. Now, you don't normally do that. You use gas heating is much more economical because 2/3 of the energy in electricity goes up in the air before it even gets into the power lines. In any case, the Ukrainians rely on an awful lot of electrical heat. And when it gets cold, it's going to be a problem. You're going to want to restart that reactor, I suspect.
And other countries watching this, we've talked about South Korea, we've talked about Japan. We can certainly mention, I observed when my visit to Germany in the 20th century, The German Bavaria has nuclear power plants and perhaps shut down now. Perhaps they're going to shut down the last three. But Poland is talking about building one. So lessons learned here. And is there anything to be done about the plants that exist?
Well, as we discussed on earlier sessions, I don't understand why you wouldn't do some of the precautions other countries have taken. Iodine pills, sure. In the case of Belarus, active air and missile defense at the site. In the case of Japan, they have remote control rooms to at least shut down the plant if it's hit, including the control room that would be on site that would be hit. You can do more. I don't know, however, that there is a, to use a bad metaphor, a silver bullet to protect such a vulnerable target set. I think you should do more than you're doing. And then the question occurs, build more, where? How are you going to protect those? Are you going to even bother to ask? Are you going to do anything in the way of a threat assessment? This is all virgin territory, never been done before, needs to be.
Your measure then, just to sum where we are right now, the reporting is that the plant is functioning and the electricity is flowing, one of four lines. As long as that electricity keeps flowing and is not interrupted, there is no imminent disaster. However, Henry, without that electricity, you mentioned we have finite amount of time for the diesel generators to work. And then after that, it's unknown. Is that correct, Henry? We just have 30 seconds.
Well, no, it actually is known. It's a mess, a hot mess, literally. You know, the idea that you can cool these things without incoming electricity or on-site emergency generation of it, it doesn't work that way with light water reactors. They need to have, you know, the water moving.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, that is a real problem. And I think what we're seeing now is on both sides, the Ukrainians and the Russians, are realizing that the fear of what might occur is something that can be weaponized, literally, to mobilize either fear and loathing on our part and maybe a desire to cave to Putin's demands, or conversely, to solidify our resolve to back the Ukrainians in dealing with what looks to be a rather imprudent, frightful mismanagement of the war by Putin.
Henry Sokolsky, the Executive Director of the Nonproliferation Policy Education Center. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.